Vegas, baby, Vegas!
At the end of the game, you count up your money. That's how you find out who's bet.
All my bets were safe. There just wouldn't be any juice.
The point spreads, the prop bets, the teasers, the parlays. From Vegas to you, this is Behind the Bets.
Welcome in another Behind the Bets podcast. I am Doug Kazarian. Yesterday was the college football podcast. Coming up, NFL coverage. We're going to recap the week three. Patriots losing record. Are they still a contender in the AFC? We'll chat about that. Also, the Chiefs, is the verdict still out? They've been lights out. And the Rams, undefeated. Are they unbeatable? They obviously have a big game coming up tonight on Thursday. So we'll get into all of that with John Murray of the Westgate Las Vegas Superbook. We're going to recap the card, also play a little baby bankroll bonanza, and then making his debut on the Behind the Bets podcast is Mike Clay from our fantasy football coverage. He's an analyst who specializes in wide receiver and cornerback matchups. So good to get Mike on, and we'll do a little betting talk, particularly with the prop bets for all the key games, the primetime games, the Thursday night, Sunday night, and Monday night games. So we'll get into all that. Just a reminder, yesterday's podcast, all college football, that was posted on Wednesday, September 26th. So download that as well. But straight ahead, we have NFL talk.
Talk nerdy to me.
Oh, we're borrowing a segment from the college football podcast. Brad Edwards not in, but Mike Clay is in for a little NFL style of talk nerdy to me. Mike, how are you, man?
I'm good. I don't, you know, some people would take offense to that, you know, being called a nerd. I do not. I've accepted that long ago. Even when I was young in grade school and high school, I knew I was a sports nerd. So, and just a nerd in general. So I'm cool with it.
Well, I'm glad. Brad and I actually talked about it on the last time he was on the podcast, and we were both like totally cool with ever being called that.
Hell yeah. Absolutely.
I think it's a sign of affection. At least that's where I'm intending it to.
We talk about football for a living. Like, come on. I mean, how can you complain, right?
So you do a lot of stuff with fantasy football. You're a fantasy football analyst here. You do stuff on the podcast. You do stuff on Sunday mornings on the Fantasy Football Show, which I think all the content's great. You focus on matchups. That's one of your big things. And I think there's obviously overlap with fantasy and then betting, especially prop betting. And especially because you're focused on receivers and defensive backs matchups. And I just thought it'd be good to at least discuss, maybe kick around some few props, and just let our listeners sort of into this space where I think there's always wisdom to be gleaned.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I do the player projections inside the fantasy game as well. I've been doing them for a long time, almost a decade now, always tweaking that model. As you know, you're always trying to find one new variable that can help you, whether it's betting or in fantasy football. So, it's been a natural fit for player props for a long time.
So let's start with the Thursday game because it is such a marquee game with the Rams hosting the Vikings. And first overview question, any adjustment to your power ratings or your projections given that it's a Thursday short rest, especially for the team that's traveling?
Actually, no. I've been meaning to kind of dive back into this, but a few years ago I did a study on Thursday Night Football compared to Sunday and didn't see many significant differences. So maybe that's changed in the last 3 years, but I didn't see anything too significant overall, whether it's rushing efficiency, passing efficiency, scoring. You do have some low-scoring affairs, boring ones. We see them on Sundays too. But we also see a couple shootouts. We might get one this week, too.
There's so many moving parts throughout the course of the week, and then week to week, and then season to season with rule changes and other moving variables. It's hard, I would imagine, to start to make all things constant except for the day of the game and then compare notes.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that stuff's changing all the time. We actually saw the league using maxing out in three wide sets and pass percentage 2 seasons ago. Last year, everything just dive-bombed. Offense was down. Passing was down. 3 wide sets were down. It was just a bizarre. I think it was mostly related to all the quarterback injuries and injuries in general across the NFL. We've seen that bounce back and then some so far. We're seeing passing through the roof. We're seeing touchdown. Field goal attempts are down a little bit, but touchdowns are going crazy this season. So, and 3 wide sets have bounced back as well. So it's kind of, again, we're always on this little roller coaster, but it's always leading toward more offense. Scoring's always, over time,
it's trending upwards. Going up. Okay, so let's dive into these proposition bets. Thursday night, again, we'll start with Vikes at the Rams. And, you have the sheet in front of you. I've sent it to you ahead of time. What jumps out to you in terms of your projections versus some of these prop bets?
Yeah, I think Todd Gurley pops out as a player prop here. They're at 88.5 rushing yards at minus 110. I have him at 79 rushing yards and 18 carries. So a couple things here. you know, that I looked at. The Rams obviously like to pass the football. You look at game script adjusted passing. They do throw the ball plenty under McVay. I think this will be a competitive game. I actually have him at 4.4 yards per carry. That's above where he is this season. So I'm actually giving him some more respect looking, you know, comparing more historical usage for him, how efficient he's been. And it's hard to predict. So you don't want to go too nuts giving him like five and a half yards per carry, right, which is always a theme for player projections. Again, game script super positive so far. Oakland, Arizona, Chargers.
I'm sorry, what does that mean, game script super positive?
For him. Positive for him as in he's getting second half rushing attempts because they're ahead in the games,
gotcha,
which is going to be often the case. That may not be the case against this Minnesota defense, which is very good. And we saw that last year, 15 carries, 37 yards against the Vikings, one of his down games. So, again, I'm giving him some respect in the efficiency department relative to what he did last year against his team, but I think you if you're conservative here, he's going to fall behind or below 88.5, barring a a long run. They're hard to predict.
Yeah, that is hard to predict because they use him so much as a pass catcher at the backfield.
Yes.
And
scrimmage yards will be over.
Right, right. But it's so different because you do these pop passes and swing pass could be sometimes be a lateral or a forward pass, depending. I mean, that's just that's just the randomness of stuff. But I do see where you're going with this, and it's hard to project how the Vikings are going to come out given the short rest and given the disaster, the egg that they laid against the Bills on Sunday.
Yeah, no Everson Griffin either for them, right, obviously dealing with some off-field trouble, so that's a loss for that defense. But again, all in all, I think you're going to have a lower scoring game. I'm actually feeling the under on this one as well. I have a 23-20 in favor of the Rams, but I think the Vikings are too good to lay another egg. I mean, they're just too good. I think they'll hang in this game.
Yeah, we talk about it all the time in sports. Flat spots. Penn State had one last Friday night against Illinois with Ohio State on deck. And they were down, trailing by three at the end of the third quarter. Now, they came back and actually covered a big number. But we talk about flat spots all the time. You get a big win, and then you're sort of – or a look-ahead spot, I guess is a better way to put it in this case. Probably been asked questions throughout the course of the week about the Vikings-Rams showdown. So that's just something that has happened in sports since the beginning of time. So I almost want to throw that game out, just given everything. Sorry, Bills fans, but – it is something to keep in the back of your mind. You would expect a better effort from the Vikings.
Yeah, absolutely. And speaking of which, again, you don't want to get too caught up. And the Bills came out strong, scored a bunch of points early, and then kind of leveled off the rest of the way. The Vikings defense cracked down from that point forward. And that's another reason. Again, I'm not going to get too caught up in a quarter or two on the Vikings D because we know it is so loaded with talent. And that's why I'm taking the Rams under 28.5 here, too. I like the under here.
For team total.
For team total. I have them at 23. Again, averaging 34 this season, but the schedule, as mentioned, has been light. You're playing Oakland, Arizona, and a Chargers defense missing some key pieces. They're at 30.7 last season. That was their average, so that's almost their line for this game against one of the best defenses in the NFL. And by the way, they fell short of this mark, 28.5 in 8 of 17 games last season. They don't have Zuerlein. They have Sam Thicken, a kicker. There's a lot of variables in play that make me think they come up a little short here.
Let's move to Sunday's game. Steelers coming off their first win of the season. This Ravens team, not afraid to put up some points. They've kind of surprised in that regard. What stands out to you here on the prop sheet?
Yeah, I'm liking Joe Flacco here, over 255.5 passing yards. Again, that's minus 110. I only have it at 6 yards, so I'm at 261. It's not a big difference. It's not one I'm running to jump on here, but there's a few reasons I like the over. Obviously, the Steelers' secondary situation is a mess right now. They're rotating opposite Joe Hayden there. He's missed some time with an injury. It's just been kind of a disaster at corner. So that helps Flacco. Obviously, he's been better with his new weapons. Teams have thrown 69% of the time against the Steelers so far. Again, adjusting for game script. So, what happens in the second half, depending on the score, time left, that is the third pass heaviest offense. So obviously, teams are trying to throw the ball and attack that secondary. The game is in Pittsburgh. They're going to be throwing often against Big Ben. He's so good at home. He's going to be efficient. The Steelers are going to score points in this game, and the Ravens have been pretty pass heavy so far. Consider Flacco 236 yards, 376, 277. He's been better. And by the way, he threw for 269 against the Steelers in Pittsburgh last season. So again, a lot of reasons I think to like the over here.
And somewhat, I would assume, correlated to that is you said here on the sheets that we emailed ahead of time, Alex Collins under.
Yeah, I have him under 64.5 yards. Again, this one's tight as well, but he's played, believe it or not, he's played fewer snaps by two than Buck Allen this season. So Allen's been getting a lot of run. Again,
yeah.
I think this will be a competitive game in Pittsburgh, potentially playing from behind. That means Allen. That means Allen's on the field, not not Alex Collins when they're
Why
trying to come
that
back.
Better pass catcher?
He is the better. Okay. Yeah, he's a bit more versatile, better pass catcher. He's caught 45 plus passes two of the past three seasons. He's just better in that arena. And Collins is not. He's the between the tackles guy. Now, I will say this. Collins killed the Steelers last year. 202 yards yes. on 27 carries. Obviously was very effective last year, played well. He hasn't been quite as good this year. His yardage totals 13, 35, and 68 coming off a better game.
Well, he was like fresh when he came to the Steelers last year. Ravens
by
last
the Seahawks,
year.
Yeah.
Right, because you almost get it's not fair. He's playing like week 12, like it's week two, and everyone else is banged up. Uh-huh. Defense is missing probably three guys in a regular season game. And there's wear and tear on the defense.
Yeah, and Steelers still adjusting to some issues they had on the defensive side of the ball. I think one of those games was without Shazier. Obviously, he was injured, so that's a factor as well. And the Steelers do have two good defensive tackles as well. They haven't been great against the run so far, but they're pretty good up front there, which could be a factor as well for Collins, Tuitt, and Hayward, obviously. So. Yeah, he's been facing more box defenders. The efficiency hasn't been quite as good, and I think game script just goes against him. I just think Allen's going to get the run in this game.
And you like the under here for Big Ben as well.
Yeah, going under here, 26.5 completions. I'm at 23, so this one actually is kind of sizable. He had 23 against Cleveland, playing with the lead throughout most of that game. Okay, he had 39 in a full-on comeback against the Chiefs. Obviously, they were down 21. He was throwing a ton, and 30 against the Buccaneers. But completed almost 80% of his passes against that awful secondary. I think that's all important because he's averaged above 26.5 completions in a season once in his career in 2015. That's the line for this game. I mean, he's never, I think it's an awfully high number. Was at 24 last season, 23.5 in 2016. They've been crazy pass heavy because of the way games have gone. I'm not sure this one is going to be a shootout per se. So I think it comes down a little bit. It just what he's done so far and what their offense has been so far does not align with the Big Ben era in Pittsburgh. It does not align with the Mike Tomlin era in Pittsburgh. And I know that they changed coordinators, but I don't think that's a big difference because personnel-wise, it's been pretty much the same.
You mentioned the Chiefs. Well, they're actually playing Monday night, very high-profile game in Denver against the Broncos. And that means we get to bet on Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah, we got a theme here, and it's going to be the under, right? I think scoring will be down here. I'm at quite a bit under the Vegas lines here. 26-23 is what I have in favor of the Chiefs. And again, a lot of reasons. I'm asked this often. I don't know if you get this question too. I say like, okay, this guy's efficiency is crazy. He's going to regress to the mean, and people say, when's he going to regress to the mean? Well, right away, obviously. Right, I mean, it's going forward. He should theoretically at any time he could exceed. He could exceed expectations a little longer, but that doesn't mean you should be counting on that, obviously. So that's the case for Mahomes. He's just been off the chart so far. Consider this, 9.6 yards per attempt so far. Remember Matt Ryan's 2016, where he just went nuts and just had
right,
that crazy...
with Shanahan, the MVP year.
Had the crazy good MVP year, right? 9.26 yards per attempt. And that was the highest the NFL had seen since Kurt Warner, 9.88 in 2000.
I think I'm of the belief that he is going to set all sorts of records. I just think the way this offense is structured, and I think we're seeing it with Alabama and Tua, and just the way the offenses have evolved, I think rookie quarterbacks are better now. They're more prepared because of college. I think NFL teams are using some of college systems. Like there's overlap now that there didn't used to be, and the quarterbacks are coming into college much more prepared, whether it's the Elite 11 or just more. There's more overlap with high school and college. I think just everything's more advanced. Now, I'm always a big fan of the modern day. So when you have Mahomes, who has this arm talent that everyone says, and you can obviously see as a casual viewer, and you have these weapons, and Andy Reid has always wanted a guy like this, why should it stop, especially when the rules are all in place, to lend itself to more scoring?
I think the thing is you're betting on a historical season, which is hard to do. I think you have to tone down.
Were people saying this with the Warriors, though, when they first started shooting threes? I mean, because they shattered records. I think this is like the Warriors.
So that's fine. If you want to say, I think this is just a new era now, like they're just going to break the NFL, then that's okay.
I'm okay at under 295 and a half.
I was just about to say.
That's insane, especially against the Denver pass rush. Mm-hmm. And, I think this Denver team, I think this is way too inflated. Now, I just think he's going to be awesome, and they might break all sorts. Because what are they, on the same pace as that first Broncos team with Peyton Manning? There's some parallels there.
The
when Manning had all those weapons.
Yeah. Well, they're on pace to blow the 2007 Patriots out the door.
Right.
I mean, they're averaging 5 touchdowns a game. That offense was at 4 a game. I mean, that's why it's hard for me to get behind them blowing away an offense that had 50 passing touchdowns.
No, they'll have like 4 games where they don't break 20.
Yeah.
Like, I definitely think that. But I do think they're going to light it up the rest of the way. And I think there's going to be extenuating circumstances, one of which could be Denver. Just the fact that they're playing such a potent defensive line. Maybe Mahomes is a little rattled under the lights. Who knows? It's not that, it's a different setting. You do more pregame interviews, national television, whatever. Maybe I'm crazy. But I'm not saying over 295.5 for his passing yards. But I do think this team and all the other stuff I mentioned is a reason that I think it's going to continue more often than not.
Yeah, and just to touch on that, I mean, I have him at 272, so this one's not even close for me. The line's 295.5. He's averaging 299 this season. So as everything has gone so well,
the line is still almost identical.
So and again, that's with 31 pass attempts a game. So the efficiency has just been off the charts. Denver pass D has not been great, but they're only averaging 288 a game so far this season. Mahomes 256 against the Chargers. That's the best defense he's played. He's put up 326 against the Steelers and 314 against the 49ers, who, again, light secondaries with issues he took advantage of. I don't necessarily think that's the case against this Broncos defense that has Bradley Roby, has Chris Harris, has emerging safety. So it's gonna be a little trickier. Also, one other thing to consider is Andy Reid's offenses don't actually run a lot of plays. You know, he's usually below average. It's a somewhat high efficiency, low volume offense that could limit his attempts as well in this game. So I still have him, by the way. This projection has him at 272. I have him projected at 8.1 yards per attempt on 34 attempts. So that's generous. 8.1 is the highest in the projection of any quarterback for this week. So still being generous and still comes out at 272. So unless they fall behind and have to throw a lot, I think he'll fall short here.
Okay. And then you have a couple other props. I like this. Royce Freeman not to score a touchdown.
Yeah, touchdowns are always tricky. I've actually been doing a player prop for Thursday Night Football on the site in the preview we post, and when you're flirting with touchdowns, you like your guys getting the ball inside the 5 and you're nervous. It's always tough. So
I'm well aware of sweating picks out.
That fantasy too.
I'm familiar with this.
But we're 2-1, so we'll try and keep that going. So I'm going no on Royce Freeman here. He does have 2 and 3 games. That would obviously give you some optimism he can get in. But this one's only, Noah's 120. I like this one a lot, -120. He is their primary goal line back so far, but that hasn't meant much because you have Keenum who ran in a touchdown. You have Freeman, who has handled 2 of their 5 carries inside the 5 during weeks 1 and 2. And that's notable because, remember, Phillip Lindsay was thrown out of this game early this past week. So that's kind of inflated Freeman's numbers.
Great point there.
A little bit. So, again, 5 carries inside the 19-yard line. He's sharing the backfield. You're still seeing Lindsay match him in carries each week. You have Devontae Booker mixed in. And again, he's going to be very reliant on getting that ball at the goal line. And we don't know for sure if he will. Again, he's had a slight edge so far, but it wouldn't shock me if they got down there and Phillip Lindsay ran it in. It shouldn't shock anyone.
Sure.
He hasn't locked that down for sure, even though he's had a slight edge. So, I got to lean no on this one. It's a close call.
And I'm seeing a trend here. You got both team totals under.
Yeah, absolutely. Again, I think the Chiefs come back to earth a little bit. I mentioned it, 5 touchdowns per game, only 2 field goal attempts. That kind of ratio is not sustainable in the NFL. You don't even see great teams just score it every time.
Unless you're the Ravens, who are 12 for 12
yes.
in scoring touchdowns in red zone opportunities.
Yes, that is a regression to the mean.
I would say that's an outlier or regression. Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. Again, I just, I mentioned it before. Just they're blowing the 2007 Patriots. So we're perfect every week out of the door in terms of touchdowns. I can't see it keep up. But, Denver defense, they've been okay. Probably not as good as we had hoped, bringing in Bradley Chubb to go with Von Miller. But still, only 23 points allowed per game so far. The game's in Denver. That's a factor as well. So I think they come up short.
All right, man. Well, this was fun. It was good to do this. I know you've been knee deep, shoulder deep, neck deep in all this stuff since day one. And I think there's a lot of interesting information I wanted to share to the audience. And I appreciate your taking the time and coming, dropping some pearls.
I mean, you
wisdom.
Wanted me to nerd out, so I just read off stats as fast as I could. I mean, hopefully it did the trick.
Nerd alert!
That's what we need to do here. But no, seriously, Mike, thanks, man. I know we talk a lot off air. It was good to do it on air.
Yeah, a lot of fun. Thanks for having me on.
Talk nerdy to me.
Now a word from one of our sponsors. As many of you guys know, I wear a suit on television. Most of us wear suits from time to time. Some of us even every single day. We know what it feels like to have a suit that feels great. Indochino does that, but is also expanding into casual clothing with made-to-measure chinos. Indochino is the world's most exciting made-to-measure menswear company, making suits and shirts to your exact measurements for an unparalleled fit and comfort. Here's how it works. Visit a stylist at a showroom and have them take your measurements personally or measure at home yourself and shop online at Indochino.com. Choose your fabric inside and out. Choose your design, customizations. Submit your measurements with your choices. Relax while your suit gets professionally tailored and mailed to you in just a couple of weeks. This week, listeners can get any premium Indochino suit for $359 at Indochino.com when entering Behind the Bets at checkout. That's 50% off the regular price for a made-to-measure premium suit. Plus, shipping is free. That's Indochino.com with the promo code Behind the Bets for any premium suit for just $359 and free shipping. Incredible deal for a premium made-to-measure suit. Indochino, also expanding into casual clothing, your made-to-measure chinos will quickly become your go-to pant, pairing as easily with a suit jacket as they do with a sweater. And they'll be good any time of year for any occasion, from boardroom meetings to Sunday brunches. Indochinos at an introductory price of $79.
He started as a ticket writer.
Well, the handle has gotten a lot higher here in the last hour.
Now he's a race and sportsbook director.
I have the guys at work here calling me Mr. Director and not looking directly into my eyes.
With people.
Brought in a whole new staff this year. It's kind of a Seinfeld-esque move where we just rotate the guys so the material doesn't get stale, Doug.
What happened in between? A hot tub and ESPN.
It might get old eventually, wow. But I don't think we're there yet.
No, but we're going to do it for the college and the pro podcast, huh?
Yes. That's I think your esteemed status requires such.
Yeah. Yeah, I can tell you that the staff here had a lot of fun with the other intro music. I believe there was even talk of one of them having it as the ringtone on her phone, which I thought was a little overboard, but funny, so I appreciate that. We'll see what they think of this one. I'm sure that there'll be similar comments made.
Yes, I hope so. And I'm just glad they're listening. And I hope they're, what is it, downloading and rating? What do we, Kai, what's the proper terminology? Rate
download,
and review.
Download, rate, and review.
Yes, so everyone listening, download, rate, and review. I don't care if you listen.
I make them. Make them listen on their lunch breaks, Doug. That's ever since I got the director nod. That's non-negotiable.
Good.
So that's their lunch. Their lunch break it consists of sitting there, headphones in, listening to this show.
As it should. Yeah. I appreciate that because we need the help we can get. So that's important that you're the minions are doing that, right? Because that's really what you call them.
Yeah, that sounds about right. I mean, not to their faces, of course, but yeah, pretty much.
Right. Yeah, then that HR would have to get involved. We don't want that.
Yes, true.
What a week in the NFL. Are you kidding me with some of this stuff? And I know we should know better than to expect the unexpected, but I mean, where do you want to start, right? I mean, should we start with the ridiculous Vikings Bills, the biggest upset according to the point spread in what, since 1995?
Yeah, that's the biggest NFL upset I can remember since I've been in the business in terms of the point spread, the team actually winning outright. Like, we see this in college football a lot where, like, somebody asked me, like, where that Virginia Tech upset ranked. And I was like, well, this happens almost every year in college football. You get a 4-touchdown favorite losing a game. It's really not that big of a deal. That one didn't really register that much. But a 17-point NFL favorite losing at home, that you just don't see that in the NFL. And they didn't just lose, Doug. That game was over in the first half. Buffalo crushed the Vikings.
Yeah, no, it was total look-ahead spot. It had all the makings. Like, I'm mad I didn't take the Bills in the bonanza, but because when I did the pick, I'm like, yep, I'm taking the points here. Because I think we talked about what Josh Allen was doing at the end of the previous game, and we knew that, it's 17 points against a professional team. With that being said, I had no idea they'd lose. No chance. And I'm actually, it's hard to do. I'm eliminated in my survivor pool. My double elimination survivor pool out after 3 weeks.
Yeah, double elimination. Well, I had a buddy that is a loyal listener to this show. I should note that. He texted me and he asked me what if I thought he should use the Texans in a survivor pool. I said, dude, don't get cute. Just take the Vikings. Just take the win and move on to the next week. I feel less bad about it because the Texans lost too. So either way, the kid was gone. But how could you not? I don't know how you couldn't take the Vikings, and I don't blame anybody that did. I mean, they're 16.5, 17-point favorites. How could that possibly lose? I mean, I think you're getting too cute if you didn't take them.
I agree. Because
obviously, it didn't work out.
I was joking about it on Twitter about the Browns. I was like, all right, who had the guts to actually use them in a survivor pool? A couple people screenshot and tweeted me back. I was like, all right, I like it. Although, you know, you're probably going to lose the next week because you're going to be taking 2-point home favorites and things like that and getting too cute. But for 1 week, you were smarter than everyone else.
To me, the Browns game was the most interesting game of the week, actually.
I was just about to say, let's talk about that Browns game because...
Yeah, I thought that was the momentum shift when Mayfield went in for Tyrod Taylor. I mean, it lifted that whole team. And I agree with you, like, it was inevitable that the Jets would start making some mistakes, and that was a big part of it, and the quality of Cleveland's defense was a big, big part of it. But when they made that QB switch, the whole team looked like they were lifted up. And Mayfield was making some really impressive throws. I was very impressed with Baker Mayfield.
He looked great, and I don't know, you know, you and I were texting during the game and even after. Like, look, I'm a Tyrod Taylor guy, so to speak, in terms of he's fine, he's a game manager. My whole thing with all this is I just give coaches deference. My approach was, well, clearly they see Baker Mayfield every day at practice. And if he's not ready, then I'm okay with Taylor. I think he's a good enough quarterback. But when he came in and played great, I'm like, what the heck's Hugh Jackson looking at? Like, right? Like, how did he miss this? Like, going back to last year, why did Deshaun Watson need a couple weeks to start? Like, what are these coaches doing? Now, you can't assume they'd be as good as in week one as they are week four, because I think practice matters. Like for Tua, Tua was not as great in probably the first practice he was in the practices leading up to the championship game a year ago. But at some point, they're shining. And at some point, it is your job to give your team the best chance to win. Now, I think Mayfield was probably going to be the starter the following week, not having to go against the Jets defensive front, having extra time to prepare for the Raiders. So I was okay starting Taylor, all things considered. But then he got hurt, and he wasn't playing that well either.
Well, you know, I've badmouthed Tyrod Taylor a little bit on this show, but I actually don't think he's that bad. He just looked like a guy that was playing with no confidence, Doug. He looked like a guy that just had no confidence in himself. And even those rare times when they gave him enough time to throw and he did have an open receiver, he was missing those open receivers. So the Browns had to make a move to Mayfield. And Mayfield's going to have up and downs. He's going to have struggles, but you know, he's not going to have a lot of situations he's going to come into where it was harder than what he dealt with on Thursday. Got to come in cold off the bench, trailing by 2 touchdowns against a good defense. I mean, I got to think that's going to be one of the toughest spots he'll find himself in this whole season.
I agree. So the Browns get the elusive win for the first time since 2016. And we talked about it. Look, when you factor in preseason games, Hugh Jackson has a winning record on games not played on Sunday. Right? I mean, Thursday, Saturday?
I got to say one thing. You mentioned giving deference to coaching staffs. I agree with you on certain coaching staffs. I'm not going to give too much deference to Hugh Jackson. This man was 1-32-1 going into that game last Thursday. So I don't know why he deserves to be. Do we just assume he's doing the right thing? I'm not sure I can agree with that.
Of that is the coaching record? We've talked on this podcast before how you felt Todd Bowles did one of the better coaching jobs last year, and I agreed with you.
He did.
So it's not just about the record.
It's not always about just the record, but when you go 1-31 your first 2 years,
is it his fault the kicker missed against New Orleans in Pittsburgh?
No.
Okay.
No.
Going back to last year, the roster gave him DeShone Kizer as a quarterback. How many coaches could have won with DeShone Kizer?
DeShone Kizer was pretty bad.
I'm not saying he's a Hall of Famer. Okay. My only point was giving him deference was that in the quarterback. Like, if I was there at practice every day, then I would have more confidence in my opinion of who should be the quarterback. But I'm not there. I hadn't even watched Hard Knocks until just recently. So my point is, all right, clearly the coaches know something more than I do. That's all I was saying. And then when I saw Baker Mayfield play, I'm like, well, clearly the coaches are wrong. So that deference vanished.
Did you see that throw Mayfield made to the sideline to Callaway, the one that was over his shoulder, and the kid dropped it? I mean, I think it was almost like he didn't think there was any way the ball could get there. That throw was so good, it almost shocked the receiver, and he couldn't haul it in. Mayfield was just making some spectacular throws in that game. He looked awesome. If Mayfield's anywhere near as good as he looked on Thursday, Cleveland is a dangerous team, Doug. Because they've got players all over the roster. I love the other rookie, Ward from Ohio State. Miles Garrett's a superstar. I mean, there are players everywhere on that team.
Yeah, especially that defense. Very, very stout. So I did that piece for quarterback injuries, and we updated it. Baker Mayfield to Taylor is a 3-point change. So that kind of jumped off the screen to Ed. So you have the Browns catching 2.5 at the winless Oakland Raiders.
I like the Raiders last week. I gave that out in the bonanza. Your guys let me down in the second half, DK. I mean, the Raiders, I really thought that was a spot where they were going to get their first win. I guess I'll give credit to Miami. Miami's 3-0. I don't know how that's possible, but
you're blaming the Raiders?
At gambling, the deadly sin is to mistake bad play for bad luck.
Just saying.
I'm blaming the Raiders. I'm excusing myself. I'm absolving myself of all blame here, and I'm blaming the Raiders for that one.
Well, I mean, what happens if Cleveland goes into the black hole and wins here?
Are they a playoff team? John Gruden's not going. Oh, you're talking about on the Browns side. I don't think it's crazy to think the Browns could get to the playoffs. I really think the talent level's there. They finally made the quarterback change that I've been saying for weeks they needed to make. I don't think it's that crazy to think they can make the playoffs. The AFC doesn't have the depth that the NFC has. You know, Pittsburgh is there for the taking. The Steelers aren't that good this year. Yeah, I think Cleveland could possibly make the playoffs.
Is a division champ or a
Well, you know, Baltimore and Cincinnati are both pretty good, too. I mean, it's going to be hard for them to win the division, but I don't see why they couldn't get back into the mix. They've got the talent there, man. That team has a lot of good players. That's what happens when you go, you know, win 0, 1, or 2 games for years. You get these things called draft picks, and eventually your roster turns over, and it looks pretty good.
Yeah, the guys you mentioned a little bit ago were all top 5 picks with Ward, right, who had the strip against the Jets on Thursday. And then also Myles Garrett obviously blowing things up. So
that's great.
I agree that the Jets game was most interesting. I think there's another game that was extremely interesting, and that was the Patriots-Lions. And we know all the stats about the Pats coming off a loss. I just didn't understand why they were running the ball so much in the first half. I mean, Brady, 133 passing yards, the fewest he's had in a game since 2014.
Yeah, that game really saved our week in the NFL, Doug, because we did very poorly on the afternoon games on Sunday. The Rams-Chargers game, that game going Rams to the over was worst-case scenario for us. We took a big, big loss on that game. The Lions winning outright just saved our whole day, knocked out so many money line parlays, so many teasers, all on the Patriots. That was a huge win for us here.
So you have this 3-0 team, surprise, although we talked about the beginning of the season, the Sharps were betting the season win total over on the Fish. At New England, that line is 7, and you have the Patriots coming off back-to-back losses, which obviously does not happen very often in the Brady-Belichick era. It's only been happened 10 times since 2006, so when he was really established. He's 4-1 against the point spread off back-to-back losses. So it's usually a good spot to back him. But this Pats team, man, at some point, you got to put the dog down, right? Like, is this the time? Are we counting them out now? Are they done?
I don't know. I don't want to count them out yet. Now, I should correct you on one thing, though. We've actually lowered this line to New England -6.5 right now at the Superbook. It looks to me like the value should be on the Patriots because, I mean, I'm not a huge believer in Miami, frankly. But it's hard to lay points on New England right now, Doug. I mean, we talked about this a couple weeks ago. Outside of Belichick and Brady and Gronkowski, there's really not much to like on this roster. And Tom Brady is 41 years old. I mean, he can do all the stretching exercises he wants to, but eventually he's going to lose to Father Time.
He missed some guys, so it wasn't even the arm. It was just he didn't hit the right receiver. But I think the bigger issue is the defense. There's just no – I mean, Blake Bortles is scrambling on 3rd and 8. Stafford's picking him apart, which is fine because Stafford does that to a lot of defenses. But I, besides McCourty, I don't know anyone on this defense, and I'm a pretty big NFL fan. So they're missing the big names they've had over the years, and I just don't think this Patriots defense is very good at all.
I'm not going to jump the gun too much and write off the Patriots, but, you know, if they were to lose this game, they'd be 3 games behind the Dolphins, and the Dolphins would have the head-to-head win in New England. They'd really be playing from behind in that AFC East. They need this win on Sunday. I know it sounds crazy to say that about the Patriots on September 30th, but they really need to win this game.
So I'm looking at your AFC Championship odds. Chiefs are now the favorite at 3-1. Patriots are plus 350, so they're the second favorite right now.
Yeah, you've got to favor the Chiefs right now. And until somebody shows any kind of ability to slow down Patrick Mahomes, I think Kansas City is the rightful favorite there. The Patriots, you don't want to get too carried away with the Patriots, Doug, because they're still Belichick and Brady. The money is still going to come in on them. And I still don't think much of that AFC East division. So New England can still get back into the mix here and win that division and have a first, maybe even have a first round bye. But it's just, there's nothing to like on that team right now. Now this is where you talk about giving deference. We give deference to Bill Belichick. He's earned it. He's earned it. And so has Tom Brady. But other than that, without those two names, I mean, if you put different jerseys on that team, there's no way they'd be laying 6.5 points on Sunday.
No, you won it. But it's a good spot. We talk about spots all the time. The difference here is that the spot is also, I don't want to say, it's just not that bad for the Dolphins. They're not looking ahead. They're not fat and happy at 3-0 like we talked about last week. Denver 2-0 going on the road. I mean, like, Dolphins are up for this game. They want this game. They see blood in the water, so to speak, or at least they see it. Now, whether it's there is a different question, but they are not looking past this team at 3-0.
Oh, definitely not. And yeah, Miami's played a very easy schedule so far this season. I think that needs to be mentioned. That's why we don't want to overreact too much early in the year, because certain teams have played much easier schedules than some of their opponents.
First time in franchise history, they've started 3-0 with all 3 wins coming in 1-score games. So they certainly could be 0-3. Now, that's the NFL. You're not going to have a ton of blowouts, but that's worth saying, to your point, the quality of the opponent. So that was a monster surprise and notable. What about the flip side of things, the teams that are really shining? Let's talk about the Chiefs. You mentioned them. They're the favorites now. Verdict still out, or are they legitimately power rated at the top with some of the other top teams?
Well, Kansas City's been unbelievable. You know, I didn't give it out on our bonanza, but I really liked 49ers plus 6.5 last week. And I actually used that pick in a contest that I'm in. And they were down 35-7 in the second quarter. And San Francisco's a pretty good team. The play calling in Kansas City has been incredible. I mean, as great as Mahomes has been, he's got these wide receivers wide open on almost every play right now. So the public loves teams that score a ton of points and cover point spreads, cover big point spreads. So you can expect to see a lot of money come in on the Chiefs on Monday night. We actually already had a sharp group lay the 4.5 on Kansas City. And I'm anticipating more and more Chiefs money as we get closer to kickoff of that game.
What do you think that line closes? 6?
A lot of it depends on how many favorites cover and win on Sunday. But, I mean, if we have a huge run of favorites on Sunday, we've got that much parlay liability to the Chiefs, I wouldn't be surprised if this thing got up to 6 on Monday night. It's not that unlikely. It just depends a lot on the kind of liability you're carrying into the game.
I wish Denver was 1-2. Then that thing would go to 7. But
yeah, and Denver, you know, you picked Baltimore last week. That was a really good pick, a really good spot pick, which is exactly what you called it last week, and you nailed it right on the head. Denver was lucky to be 2-0, and then they had to go on the road to the East Coast. You know, Denver, that talk about a team that's their record was because of who they played, not so much because they're that good.
Right. They played Seattle and the Raiders at home, and they've won, I think, 13 straight home games in the month of September, for whatever that is. This Chiefs team, and we're going to talk about it more with Mike Clay, fantasy analyst, coming up later on this podcast, but I think this Chiefs team's for real. I think if they break records, it wouldn't surprise me, just given where we are in 2018 with the NFL rules, given the pass happiness of teams and the rules protecting those quarterbacks and receivers, the personnel, given the receivers and the tight end and Kelsey, and then Mahomes, and then Andy Reid at the helm, who does not play conservatively in the second half, who does not take his foot off the gas. I would not be surprised if they break the records that the 07 Patriots did, or the Broncos did with Peyton Manning. All these records, like, I wouldn't be that shocked. The only thing people are trying to pump the brakes on is because Mahomes is so young, but I don't think it matters because I think quarterbacks are much more evolved at this juncture in 2018. We see it with all the rookie QBs, with Allen, Mayfield, Darnold. I think people are just better coming into the NFL. I think this is a perfect sort of, all the stars are aligning here with the Chiefs. I wouldn't be surprised if they cover all these numbers.
And I think you should mention, too, they might need to score all these points because their defense isn't very good, Doug.
Correct.
So they might be forced into continuing to try to score even into the second half of these games because of their defense. Now, I've seen people throw out some stats about the yardage per play the Chiefs' defense has been giving up. I think those stats are a little bit unfair because they've had such big leads that they're playing more prevent defense a lot late
Bingo.
In games.
Bingo. Bingo,
so
you nailed
it. That's a little bit of a misleading stat. But Kansas City, they don't have a great defense. We know that. And they might need to keep scoring more and more as we get further into the season. They might need to keep their foot on the gas offensively.
I love that you said that. I was thinking that last weekend when I heard some of that stuff, because that is a stat that you hear often with professionals, and you have to sort of take it with a grain of salt. Like I said with the Ravens going into last week, I think their yards per play were like really good because they'd only played two games, one of which was against the Bills. And you just had to always kind of think about the why. With these stats, you can't be just so married to them. And I think that's a good call on your part, because also it brings us to the other team, the Rams, another high-profile game, this one on Thursday, hosting the Vikings. This Rams team doesn't take its foot off the gas, so they're scoring easily, and they're not afraid to win by double digits. We saw that on the Monday Nighter against the Raiders when they had the ball up six. They were throwing with like 4 minutes to go or something like that, because that's gives them the best chance to move the sticks. And we can talk about other games. You and I pretty much see eye to eye on all this stuff in terms of getting too conservative and the old school way of handling some game theory. But the Rams, like the Chiefs, are not old school. They think outside the box, and it's winning football.
Well, the Rams have the perfect marriage where they've got this young, offensive-minded guy in Sean McVay, and then they've got the old school defensive coordinator in Wade Phillips. And this could be the best coaching staff in the NFL right now. Now, I don't want to get too carried away with the Rams, and I'll tell you why. They've played, their three opponents are 1-8 so far. Now, of course, three of those wins are because they go against the Rams, right? But they're still 1-5 against everybody else. The Rams have had a very easy schedule so far. They get a real test on Thursday night against the Vikings, and they're going to be without both of their starting cornerbacks. You know, I think this is the game that the Vikings got Kirk Cousins for. And they need a big game out of Kirk Cousins on Thursday night. But we'll really find out just how good this L.A. Rams team is on Thursday, Doug.
So they've played the Raiders, which are not awful, right?
Not awful. They're not awful.
The Cardinals are.
The
Cardinals are. And then the Chargers are not awful. So I agree with you that it could be missing. But I think they're the highest power-rated team, right?
Yeah, at this point they have to be. And you know, we've got them all the way down at 2-1 to win the Super Bowl right now.
Wow.
I mean, we had a guy bet $50,000 on them at 7-2 on Sunday afternoon. So, yeah, and I think I mentioned this before. I hope I did. The Rams were one of the most popular teams in the summer for a variety of reasons. They quote-unquote won the offseason with all the free agent moves they brought in, and then the proximity of L.A. to Las Vegas, I think, was a factor. But the Rams were a very popular future bet team all summer long, and now you add in this guy's bet at 7-2. We've got a pretty big liability on the Rams right now.
So what happens? You move the Rams down and then you move other teams up, right?
Yeah, exactly, because now you're trying to write. It's kind of like we talked about on the college podcast with Tua. We've got a big liability on Tua. We're trying to write some money on some of these other guys, doing the same thing in the Super Bowl pool, trying to write some money. You know, it's a funny team we can't write a bet on, the Eagles. Nobody wants to bet the Eagles win the Super Bowl. which I think is interesting.
That's very interesting.
Yeah, we're trying to write money on some of these other top contenders and take away some of this exposure we have on the Rams.
Interesting. So you have that line 7 Thursday night.
Yeah.
Any sharp play early?
7. Not yet. We haven't seen much. We've just seen a lot of the public, as you can imagine, has been betting the Rams, laying 6.5 on the Rams. I'm going to weigh in on that game when we get to the Bonanza, though.
Ooh, a little tease.
You don't want to. I think I went 1-2 again last week with the Raiders let me down, and then the Chargers game went way over. So you don't want to. Don't listen to me too hard, but I do like a side in that game.
Okay, so we'll get to that in a little bit, and that's a nice work out of you, Murray. You're such a polished broadcaster now.
I've taken a lot of voice classes, a lot of media classes. It really consumes my week, Doug.
Let's recap one of the games. How did you guys do? You said last week on the podcast that you'd probably going to need the Steelers on a Monday Night Football game, which I don't think you've ever experienced. What ended up happening with that handle and that line movement and the ultimate result?
You know, we ended up writing money on both of those teams. What we really needed was actually the under.
I almost got there.
Now, it's hard to get the under when you've got like 50 roughing the passer penalties in one game. I thought Pete Morelli was the real standout of that game with his crew. They just couldn't help themselves throwing roughing the passer penalties. You know, the Steelers didn't even score in the second half of that game. I'm pretty sure they had 30 points at halftime. They didn't score once in the second half. They held on for dear life there, but we needed that game to go under the total.
Are we going to talk about Dirk Cutter's decision making on some of this, or like what do we do? Like, is it a broken record every time?
It's. I mean, I say this every week. You know how I feel about kicking field goals. I think it's for losers. I thought I was shocked when Kyle Shanahan kicked that field goal down. I think it was 38-24, and he kicked a field goal to make it 38-27. I don't know what that accomplishes. I don't know what Dirk Cutter accomplishes kicking a field goal to go 30-13. I just don't understand what these teams are doing, and I don't.
How much time left? How much time left was with that field goal? Wait, it was a 14-point game? It was a 14-point game?
You know, it was right after Garoppolo got hurt. I don't remember exactly how much time was left.
I think it was like 6 minutes.
It was late. I mean, it was late in the game. And to kick a field goal when you're all the way down there is just completely crazy to me. I don't know what he was doing there. And I've said for years how much I like Kyle Shanahan.
Right. Yeah, so me too.
He let me down with that one. Did you see the in the the Cardinals game when they had to call time? They had to punt because they called the timeout at the end of the first half. They called timeout and then they had to send in their punt team instead of just letting the clock run out.
Take the 5 yards.
I think that Arizona coach is really in over his head, and it's going to be a long year for the Cardinals.
So, the Niners were down 14 with 5 minutes and 17 seconds to go, then they kicked a field goal.
And it sounds bad enough, but you know what, Doug? It's even worse when you consider who they were playing against. They're playing against an offense they haven't stopped all game. So what makes you think you're going to be able to stop them twice and get the ball back and have two more possessions to score with? Like, I think that would be a bad decision if you were playing against an offensively inept team. But to me, it's much worse when you're playing against a team that's been moving the ball up and down the field against you all day.
It was 4th and goal on the 7, and they had just converted a touchdown. Oh, so it became 4th and goal on the 17. So they're basically saying the odds of recovering an onside kick were better than converting the 4th and 17.
Yeah, I mean, when you're pushed back at the 17, I can see it there. And I do like Kyle Shanahan. I just don't see much point in kicking field goals when you get down that close. Now, 4th and 17, I mean, you can see where he's coming from.
I think the bigger issue, and I want to bring this up because Twitter went crazy, and there were two situations on Monday Night Football, and people texted me like, oh, you seem like a know-it-all. It just bothers me because I 100% think I'm right. So let's go back to Monday Night Football, the end of the first half.
Okay.
The Bucs are obviously down sizable, right? They're down 16, 23-7. And
I thought it was 23-7. Okay.
2 minute warning. It's like 1st and goal at the 5 or 8. They run the ball, get to the 5. Pittsburgh does not call timeouts, which I think was a mistake.
Yes.
And then the Bucks ran a pass play. And in a vacuum, you run your best play, and if it's a pass play, great. But you're not in a vacuum. You also have to factor in the rest of the game, and in this case, the rest of the half with time. So if you run again, your expected value to accomplish yardage, just like you do with the thought process of scoring a touchdown when you pass, you force the other team to use a timeout or burn clock. So even if you end up settling for a field goal, the 3 points you get, in theory, is a better net because you're putting the Pittsburgh team at a bigger disadvantage to score. So right. It's not just about you're converting. You have to play defense when you're on offense as well.
At the end of the first half, yeah, you've got to factor in how much time are we leaving these guys. You know, this is a Pittsburgh team that had already scored 23 points in the first half. So how much time are we going to leave Roethlisberger in that offense? They end up kicking a field goal from the 3-yard line, which I always think is a mistake in any situation. And then they give up the long touchdown drive and, you know, just a disaster. I mean, Cutter just could not have handled that worse than he did.
Well, yeah, I think the bigger mistake is running, but not running on second and third down. Like, if you run on second, then I don't think the Steelers get a touchdown. So you go from having you have the ball first and goal on the 5 with the clock running to like 1:30, okay? And you end up net 4 points. Minus 4 points.
Yeah. Well, and it just shows what we always kicking field goals just for losers, Doug. I mean, that was a really critical sequence in that game.
They would have been better off running 3 times into the line of scrimmage because then they would have probably been a net 0 instead of a net -4 because they would have either burned the whole clock or forced the Steelers to use timeouts. And someone even said on Twitter, like, they'd be better off taking a knee instead of kicking a field goal because the percentage of scoring when the team is backed up on its own 3 is so unlikely versus kicking that off. And this is a team that had already put up 23 points in the first half. So going 40 yards or whatever they needed to go to for a field goal, like, it's just, I don't understand why they can't figure this out.
They would have been better off going for it on 4th and goal at the 3, right, even if they didn't get it. Now Pittsburgh is stuck at their own 3-yard line. Most likely, I mean, I'm jumping ahead here, but most likely the net would have been 0 points. Maybe Pittsburgh finds their way into field goal range. Even that would be better for Tampa Bay than what happened.
But it's also second and third down. If you run, and just run on second down, then the Steelers don't have all their timeouts, or they're like 30 seconds. It's just crazy. And then it gets even more questionable at the end of the game. So 4th and 10 on their own 20-ish, down 3, they punt it.
Oh, yeah. I may have made a sarcastic comment at the place I was watching the game to the guys I was watching that game with. What are they doing? Punting on 2 minutes left in the game. It's just, you've got an offense that's explosive, that scored 30 points. I know they didn't do much in the second half, but certainly Pittsburgh has a very good offensive team. I hope we agree on that. You might never see the ball again.
At some point, they're going to realize that possession is more important than yards. And they punted. So they went 3 and out. They punted with 2:53, and I believe they had all 3 timeouts.
I think they had two timeouts, but I'm not sure about that.
I think you're right. You're right. So the key is, here's the thing. You are punting with the hope that you can stop the Steelers, right, and get the ball back. So if apply that concept, why don't you apply it to if you go for it and don't get it, you can stop the Steelers and force a field goal attempt, and they've already missed a field goal and hit an upright on an extra point. So the whole principle of punting is you think your defense can stop them. Well, that should be the reason for going for it, because you think their defense can stop them and hold them to a field goal attempt. That's the whole point.
I'm with you all the way.
The whole reason you're punting is the reason you should go for it. That's the irony in all this.
So they're kicking field goals, they're punting, and what ended up happening, Doug? They lost.
And the Steelers threw for it, right? The Steelers went for it with a pass, I believe.
Yeah, they did. I think a long third down completion to Juju Smith-Schuster, I believe, was the play, if I remember. But
yeah, it was a second on a second down they threw, because the Steelers are thinking down, outside the box, because it's not that risky to throw when you have all these advantages with the offense.
Absolutely. I mean, you got to trust, especially when you got playmakers like the Steelers have. you got to trust that those guys can make the plays. But, you know, Tampa Bay's got some playmakers offensively too. And I think they would have been much better off going for that fourth and goal at the three at the end of the first half and going for it on fourth and 10 late in the fourth quarter. I think it could have been a different result.
Well, it was interesting to recap. And sorry, we had to go off on a little tangent there with clock management and mismanagement is probably the better way to put it. Any other games you want to touch on before we get into the bonanza?
Yeah, I'd like to pat myself on the back for the Seattle pick.
Yes. I wanted to steal it on the bonanza. I thought it was excellent. Now I stole it and used it in a column, but good. I thought it was very, very well analyzed.
It was a good pick. It got a little dicey there. Dallas started to rally a little bit in the fourth quarter, but Seattle was the right side in that game, and they shouldn't have been that cheap of a favorite at home at 0-2 against that Dallas team. There's not much to like about that Dallas team, Doug.
No, there's not. They've gone under, I think, 10 of their last 11 games, but I will it's a strange team because their defense is pretty good.
And yeah, it's good.
Their offense has potential, but they just don't execute. Like, I don't know if Dak Prescott's the issue. I haven't quite figured it out with that team.
I think it's Jason Garrett. I mean, we talked last week about which coaches should be on the hot seat. I put Jason Garrett. He should be on the hot seat. I know he's not because I don't know why, but he's not on the hot seat.
We thought Bill O'Brien would be gone if they lost the game. They lost the game, and he's still there.
I did. I'm very surprised by that, and you're going to be surprised when you hear what I'm picking this week.
Ooh.
Speaking of Bill O'Brien.
All right. That's another tease. Let's get to it.
It's time for Baby Bankroll Bonanza.
Oh, that music is just a thing of beauty. So,
who cut that together? Did Kai cut that together as
Kai's
well?
Kai's involved. Tim Thomas is involved. Anthony's involved. So we got a team just like you do.
That's good work. That's very good work. I wish I could contribute to the bonanza by picking a winner every now and again.
Well, you did. But, yeah, Seattle.
Yeah, I did have one winner out of three. That's pretty good. No, the intro music is good. The picks, they leave something to be desired, I think, Doug.
Okay, so you won your big bet. You won your dime bet on the Seahawks. You lost your two others, so that's a net minus 50 because Oakland was even money. So you lost $50. So you are now at minus 250 overall.
Ugh.
Okay.
Painful.
What's your juice? What's your juice on the teasers?
How many points were you?
Six.
Did you do?
Six.
We'll call it a minus 120 here.
Okay.
It's actually our teaser juice is a little higher than that, but minus 120 is more of a standard teaser number. We'll call it minus 120.
I don't know. All right. No, I think we should do it right. It's 13, right? It's minus 130.
Here at the Westgate, yeah, it's minus 130.
So I lost. I won $270.
Okay. Because you had
Cleveland.
You had the Browns on Thursday, right?
Correct. So
I had
the Ravens for 300.
Yeah, Ravens was a good pick. Should have.
I'm at 830. I'm at 830 plus 830.
I got some. I got to make some gains here, and I don't have a whole lot on my card this week. But I got to make some gains here in a hurry. I got a long way to go. Does this thing? I'm not sure if we clarified this. Are we running this thing through the Super Bowl or just through the end of Week 17?
It's a great question. I was thinking about that a couple weeks ago. I forgot to ask you. I think we should do it through the Super Bowl, right?
Yeah. Years ago, I was in a football handicapping contest, and at the end of Week 17, I won, and I was so happy. I was in first place. And then I looked at the rules, and I saw that it ran through the Super Bowl. That was very disappointing. But I think we can, for this one, we can go through the Super Bowl.
Okay. I've been doing well. I do not like this week. I'm mad I didn't follow you on the Seahawks, but it is what it is. I thought it was a great play on your part. I am open to your plays now if you want to go first or you want me to go first. I guess I'm up on the tee box, right?
I think you're still on the tee box. I mean, we got to go with the golf rules here, Doug. I got to let you – you know, last week, remember, you've said you were pulling out the driver, and all you did was talk about how you didn't like the Ravens pick, if you recall.
Well, I only went 300 on that one, but I did like it more and more as the game as the week wore on. I think I need to get involved on Twitter here because there's been some plays I've really wanted to. I thought about Lions second half. I thought about some other stuff. frustrating. Woulda, coulda, shoulda. I have a FOMO.
I thought about 49ers. Just to let you know, I almost was talking to some guys I really respect over the weekend. They like the 49ers plus 6.5 a lot in that spot against Kansas City. And I thought about tweeting at you.
Yeah. All right.
So I never pulled the trigger.
Let's do this. I have my first play. I'm going to do Baltimore-Pittsburgh Sunday night over 51 for 300.
Okay. I like you lead off with the small bets, I found.
Well, no, I led off with the Browns last week, I think.
Oh, did you?
I don't know.
No, I thought you led off with the Ravens, man.
Yeah, you're probably right. You're probably right. I just wrote it down differently.
That's an interesting total because that rivalry, that Baltimore-Pittsburgh rivalry historically has been like really low-scoring games with two really good defenses, but it certainly shifted in Pittsburgh, where Pittsburgh now is all offense, and Baltimore pretty good on offense as well. So I like that play. That's a good little lead-off play.
Yeah, the slobber knocker's not coming. I think the defensive issues for the Ravens continue, and this Steelers team, they just have to throw.
Oh, they have to, yeah. They can't trust their defense to keep the game low scoring. So they've got to get those two star wide receivers involved and stay aggressive offensively.
You're up.
Let me go with tomorrow night or the Thursday night game, Doug. I'm going to go with the Vikings plus 7. I'll do that one for $500. I think it's just an overreaction line. Minnesota clearly got caught looking ahead of this game last week against Buffalo, and they had the Everson Griffin distraction on Saturday night. That story came out, I think, Sunday or Monday. And I mentioned earlier the Rams missing both of their starting cornerbacks. Kirk Cousins, this is why he's there. He needs to have a big game on Thursday night in L.A.
I agree. This is a great game. I mean, how about the primetime games we have? We have the Minnesota and the Rams. Then you have the Ravens Steelers. And then you get the Chiefs Broncos on Monday night. A nice, nice trifecta of island games. I got another one. I'm going to go prop bet. How do you feel about that? A little tease ahead to Mike Clay coming in. I'm going to go prop Patrick Mahomes under 295.5 passing yards.
Wow.
300.
Yeah, I mean, 300 yards is a lot of yards. I can see where you're coming from with that. 295.5, that's a lot of yards. If Denver's got a decent defense, it's going to be on the road. It's just a question of can Kansas City keep Denver in check, or is Mahomes going to need to keep throwing and keep trying to score later in the game?
That is the question. So I'm going to just go with the under and see what happens.
Okay.
300 again.
I've only got one more play, and I'm going to do it for a dime. It'll be my second dime release of the year, and I mentioned it's probably going to surprise you. I'm going to go with the Houston Texans plus 1 against the Colts on Sunday. The must win. This is the must win for Bill O'Brien. I think Houston should be favored in this game. Seen some sharp money come in on the Texans. I agree with that sharp money, and I'm going to take Texans plus 1 for 1,000.
So we got a straight minus 110 here. There's no juice we need to worry about?
No, it's plus 1 minus 110 here at the Westgate.
Okay, I've touched on this in previous situations. I like the Bears first half minus 1.5. At home against Tampa Bay. I think this Nagy situation where he scripts the play, Trubisky. Now, I threw out last week because that was a horrible spot for the Bears. I should have just taken the card. I like that game a lot. I just think the Bears are going to come out, play more effectively. Trubisky's better quarterback in the first half with the play scripted. I've touched on maybe the Khalil Mack stamina issue. He always looks like he's sucking wind in the second half. I'm going to go Bears first half for 300 as well.
I like how you're mixing it up, man. You're going into the bag now, prop plays, first half plays. I'm a little nervous, but I like it.
I'm spreading the ball around. I'm using all my options here.
Yeah. No, it's good. It's a good idea. I mean, I should probably, the way I'm picking right now, I should look to get a little bit more versatile and think more outside of the box.
Fire away.
Oh, no, that was my card. I had the Vikings for a nickel and the Texans for a dime. I may add something. There's a couple other plays that interest me, and I want to see where the lines move. I'd say a decent chance that I'll add something between now and kickoff.
Fair enough. I think this. I'm going to take Atlanta in a must-win situation. It was a tough game last week. They got the Bengals at home, back-to-back road games. I found a weird stat. I don't think it really matters, but it's just worth saying. The Bengals are... Never mind, that's the wrong team I had. But I just like this spot for the Falcons. I think they get back on track. I like them minus 5.5 for 300.
We did. We had a gentleman laid Atlanta minus 5.5 to win 30,000.
Oh.
Put these numbers up. What makes me nervous about that game, though, Doug, is Atlanta's got a lot of injuries in the secondary. I think they're going to be missing both of their starting safeties. The Bengals do have a good amount of playmakers offensively right now in the passing game.
Yeah, I don't love this card. I just think I think I like it enough to play that for the minimum there.
Firm minimum. I respect that.
Yeah, I think it's about the spot, right? It's back-to-back road games for the Bengals. Atlanta needs the win. It's a demoralizing loss. So it's not ideal in that regard. But I think that's and then it wouldn't be an NFL Sunday without doing a teaser. So I
love teasers.
I like this teaser a lot. I'm going to go a dime on the. You know what? I'm going to go 1,500 on this one.
Whoa. Okay.
Biggest bet of the year, right?
This is the biggest one so far until I decide that I'm so far behind you that I have to chase with like $5,000 bets. But yes, to date, this will be the biggest play.
I'm going 12 for 12 this weekend, and that includes the Monday night parlay.
Maybe not 12 for 12.
I needed that two for the money reference. I had a great one. I was on set on VSiN yesterday, and we were picking games. And one of the guys, Windy City Sammy Panayotovich made a great. We're picking Sunday games on Tuesday, and that got me for a good laugh. I love the two for the money references. Keep them coming.
So I'm going the Jags bounce back spot. They are 7.5-point favorites over the Jets, who I don't think are very good. And give me them minus 1.5 in a 6-point teaser. And then for the second team, you know, I looked for a little bit, but I'm going with New England to win this game. I think Miami, I'm not saying they're fool's gold. I wouldn't be completely stunned if they won the division, especially after the first few weeks. But I think New England gets this game. They just have to. They're not going 1-3. And if they are, I'll lose my teaser. But I'll take the New England Patriots minus a half and a teaser to join the Jags minus 1.5.
Jacksonville, as a 7.5-point favorite, coming off of a loss, they will be a very popular teaser option. A lot of guys are going to do that 6-pointer and get it down to minus 1.5, get it through the numbers of 7-3. I would imagine New England will also be a popular teaser pick, but I think we're going to see a lot of money on the Dolphins' money line this week, Doug. I think just with the Patriots coming off two consecutive losses like this, I think Dolphins' money line will be a public play. But the Patriots will certainly have their backing. They always do.
You think a square dog there? You think on the point spread as well?
It's possible. Possible we might see that this week. It's a little early to tell. There's one other dog on the card I'm looking at. I just don't know if I can stomach taking C.J. Beathard and the 49ers. How could the Chargers be laying 10.5 points? The Chargers are such a bad home favorite. We'll see. I may add that as we get closer to Sunday.
Okay. All right. Well, let's keep an eye on that. Keep an eye on halftime lines. Keep an eye on live wagering. We got to get Twitter involved. But as always, Murray, thanks for the time, man. And, we'll keep tabs on everything as we move forward. A lot of football left this year.
Yeah, something tells me we'll be in touch between now and Sunday. You know, I mentioned also I like the Redskins last week. I left it off my card, so I wasn't that bad. I did like the Redskins in that spot. The 49ers I'm looking at right now, and there's another game I'm looking at as well, but I'll keep you abreast of everything.
What was your play for Mr. Musburger last week?
Oh, Seattle. I gave Mr. Musburger Seattle.
And what's going to be the one this week?
Houston. I mean, I'm going to go with Houston against the Colts. I try to give him my five-star play, you know, my top of the line, John Anthony play.
There you go. All right, bud, good catching up.
This has been Baby Bankroll Bonanza.
All right, that does it for this NFL podcast for the Behind the Bets. Remember, the college football podcast was Wednesday, September 26th. Thanks to John Murray for both podcasts and obviously Mike Clay making his fantasy or Mike Clay of the fantasy world making his Behind the Bets debuts. We'll see how those prop bets do, but it's just nice to discuss that because there's so much information out there from all different angles, so it was good to get his perspective on that. Thanks to everyone. Don't forget, download, rate, and review the Behind the Bets podcast. That really helps us. And don't forget also, Stanford Steve and the Bear have their podcast over on their own umbrella now. So big things, big expansion going on with all of our betting coverage. Obviously, the chalk page is tons of information out there, so go check that out. And, of course, I have that Alabama piece that I mentioned on the Wednesday podcast as well. Thanks, and we'll catch you back here next week on the Behind the Bets podcast.